reception was to take place in the king's apartments. In the first place, there were the queens, then madam, and a few ladies of the court who had been carefully selected. A great number of courtiers, also selected, occupied the time before the dancing commenced in conversing, as people knew how to converse in those times. None of the ladies who had received invitations appeared in the costumes of the fete, as the Chevalier de Lorraine had predicted, but many conversations took place about the rich and ingenious toilettes designed by different painters for the ballet of the demigods, for thus were termed the kings and queens of which Fontainebleau was about to become the pantheon. Monsieur arrived, holding in his hand a drawing representing his character. He looked somewhat anxious. He bowed courteously to the young queen and his mother, but saluted Madame almost cavalierly. His notice of her and his coldness of manner were observed by all. M. de Gaeche indemnified the princess by a look of passionate devotion, and it must be admitted that Madame, as she raised her eyes, returned it to him with interest. It is unquestionable that de Gaeche had never looked so handsome, for Madame's glance had its customary effect of lighting up the features of the son of the Marshal de Grammont. The king's sister-in-law felt a storm mustering above her head. She felt, too, that during the whole of the day, so fruitful in future events, she had acted unjustly, if not treasonably, towards one who loved her with such a depth of devotion. In her eyes, the moment seemed to have arrived for an acknowledgement to the poor victim of the injustice of the morning. Her heart spoke and murmured the name of de Gaeche. The count was sincerely pitied and accordingly gained the victory over all others. Neither Monsieur, nor the king, nor the Duke of Buckingham was any longer thought of. De Gaeche at that moment reigned without a rival. But although Monsieur also looked very handsome, still he could not be compared to the count. It is well known, indeed all women say so, that a wide difference invariably exists between the good looks of a lover and those of a husband. Besides, in the present case, after Monsieur had left, and after the courteous and affectionate recognition of the young queen and of the queen mother, and the careless and indifferent notice of Madame, which all the courtiers had remarked, all these motives gave the lover the advantage over the husband. Monsieur was too great a personage to notice these details. Nothing is so certain as a well-settled idea of superiority to prove the inferiority of the man who has that opinion of himself. The king arrived. Everyone looked for what might possibly happen in the glance, which began to bestir the world like the brow of Jupiter Tonans. Louis had none of his brother's gloominess, but was perfectly radiant. Having examined the greater part of the drawings which were displayed for his inspection on every side, he gave his opinion or made his remarks upon them, and in this manner rendered some happy and others wretched by a single word. Suddenly his glance, which was smilingly directed towards Madame, detected the slight correspondence established between the princess and the count. He bit his lips, but when he opened them again to utter a few commonplace remarks, he said, advancing towards the queens, "I have just been informed that everything is now prepared at Fontainebleau in accordance with my directions." A murmur of satisfaction arose from the different groups, and the king perceived on every face the greatest anxiety to receive an invitation for the fetes. "I shall leave tomorrow," he added, whereupon the profoundest silence immediately ensued. "And I invite," said the king, finishing, "all those who are now present to get ready to accompany me." Smiling faces were now everywhere visible, with the exception of Monsieur, who seemed to retain his ill humor. The different noblemen and ladies of the court thereupon defiled before the king, one after the other, in order to thank his majesty for the great honor which had been conferred upon them by the invitation. When it came to De Guiche's turn, the king said, "M. de Gaeche, I did not see you." The count bowed, and Madame turned pale. De Gaeche was about to open his lips to express his thanks, when the king said, "Count, this is the season for farming purposes in the country. I am sure your tenants in Normandy will be glad to see you." The king, after this pitiless attack, turned his back on the poor count, whose turn it was now to become pale. He advanced a few steps towards the king, forgetting that the king is never spoken to except in reply to questions addressed. "I have perhaps misunderstood your majesty," he stammered out. The king turned his head slightly, and with a cold and stern glance,